I'm not going to get into a big introduction to our guest this morning because her story speaks for itself, and her name is Marie Sullivan. And I want to welcome you, Marie, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
This isn't an easy story for you to tell, and all the more reason for me to say thank you for being here today. And you're going to tell us, I hope, and introduce us to the beautiful Arwen and tell me everything we should know.
Arwen was always a very lively, spirited girl. She was very, very bright, clever, and bright and beautiful to look at. She was very caring and loving, had a great sense of humour, was always the life and soul of the party, had this dazzling smile that just lit up a room. Her boyfriend described it as the Julia Roberts smile, or her boyfriend's mother. She was just wonderful and a delight. We were very close. We spent a lot of time together, and she was very open with me and told me things that I certainly would never have told my mother. She was a physiotherapist. She was a yoga instructor. She adored her dog, Elsa, and was never happier than messing around with Elsa or taking her for walks on the beach. She was very kind and caring towards her friends. And like at the start of lockdown, she was worried that some of her friends were living in the city and they didn't have somewhere to go to like we did. We lived near the beach and they were living in the city centre and they were all physiotherapists and some of them were still working in the hospitals. And she was like worried about making up a care pack for them to show that she was thinking of them and to look after them. She was always thinking about other people and caring for other people.
What a kind person.
Very kind.
Did she enjoy life at school with plenty of friends and sleepovers and parties, all the things girls
do? Yeah, she was very popular in school, and a frequent comment on her report card would be like that if somebody fell on yard or something, that Arwen would be the first person over to make sure they were okay. She was just a very kind, caring, loving person.
Yes.
Yeah.
She lived with you at home.
She did.
What was her go-to thing to watch for comfort viewing and relaxing and entertaining herself?
Oh, she liked, she loved Peep Show.
Good.
And we all loved Schitt's Creek. We used to watch Schitt's Creek and kind of, yeah, we really like loved that show. That was a real kind of comfort show. She did. She loved comedy. We all really enjoy comedy shows. So we'd watch comedy shows together.
So good humour, kindness, kind of altruism, all lovely attributes for a young person, it must be said.
Definitely. Oh, she had a great sense of humour and loved making people laugh. I remember like a week or two into COVID, she was doing a quiz. She designed a quiz for her friends from college and they were all meeting up together. But before joining them, without saying anything to them, she'd gone upstairs and she'd gotten dressed up. We had a big sombrero and she had a poncho and she'd drawn a moustache on herself so that when she went into the Zoom call, she was dressed there like
in full garb.
In full garb, and the squeals of laughter like could be heard over the Zoom call. Like, she was very mischievous and fun person, yeah.
When did you think that she was in trouble in terms of a younger Arwen? I mean, was there a pattern that developed from an earlier age, or did it all kind of come to fruition at the one go, if you like?
I suppose during her teens, she had some difficulty in school. She had been bullied early on in secondary school. She was very, very bright. And at the end of first year, she'd won awards for everything and anything, best at this and best at that and best at everything. And I remember collecting her that day, and she came out with all these scrolls and things and medals, and she was crying, and she just felt kind of almost embarrassed or a bit upset that she'd been called up repeatedly, and she was worried that people would tease her, because I suppose not everybody celebrates other people's successes.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that was a bit of a problem, and so she kind of started to struggle a little bit then, and she went for counselling, and the counsellor said that she had social anxiety. So we kind of worked with that for a while, that would have been what was going on.
How did that manifest itself? Because it's such a broad expression.
Yeah, it wasn't sort of what you'd imagine, that she wouldn't go out or anything. I think it was more what it cost her to go out, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So on the surface, she appeared great, but it just seemed to cost her a lot. And you wouldn't necessarily know on the surface that there was a problem. But like I said, behind the scenes, it was very wearing and tiring and exhausting for her. Yeah. And then she'd come home, and then it would take her a long time maybe to recover from going out and being sociable and stuff. But she seemed to get the better of that, I would say, by the time she was kind of in the later years of secondary school. She seemed to have come back to herself, and she seemed to be much better. And then again, things sort of started to go a bit off again. Then when she started college, which I kind of put down to the stress of college, she was tense, and I could just see that everything wasn't okay. And she went, I encouraged her to go back for counselling, and she went back for counselling again. And again, she seemed to sort of get on top of it. Mm.
Can I ask you, what do you think she was getting, you needed to get on top of?
I wasn't aware she did tell me actually in first year that she was starting to have suicidal thoughts. And she was not herself, as in she wasn't always as happy and the bubbly girl that I had gotten used to her being. But she went back for counselling. We talked about it a lot and talked about, you know, did she have a, I looked up, what are you supposed to do when your child tells you that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we talked about it and we discussed it and where she was at and did she have a plan and what was she going to do? And we talked about all of that. She went back to counselling and she seemed to be feeling better about that. That seemed to have passed. Like when I'd say, do you still feel that way? She would go, no. And I would sort of keep checking in on her without being a pain. You know, you're trying to walk the line between being careful and checking in and also annoying her.
You know, Marie, and I know parents are the greatest pains of all.
We're very annoying
so
people.
So you were trying to, but they're the loves of our lives. So
yeah.
you have to get those eggshells,
yeah.
practice walking, and you did just that.
Yeah, you're trying to walk the line between the two. And exactly. I would have checked in on her all the time. And if I was worried about her, checked in with her friends. And to be honest, she had called me on New Year's Eve. It would have been the start of 2019, so 2018 turning into 2019. And she'd had suicidal thoughts that night, or she'd been really upset and she'd had what she would call an anxiety attack. When she would get like that, she would call it an anxiety attack. And she would get so upset that she would want to hurt herself or want to die.
Were those moments, and they're dark moments to say the least, were they triggered by something? Did someone say something, or did she see something, or was there a reason, or were they random?
I don't know. To be honest with you, she obviously didn't tell me everything. I thought because we were having these open conversations that she was telling me everything, but obviously she wasn't. I mean, no 21, 22, 23 year old tells their mother everything. I know that. Yeah. I don't know what the trigger was, but she would get upset over something. Sometimes it seemed it could just be the idea of going out or going to a nightclub or something like that would be too overwhelming for her and she wouldn't be able to go. She would go home and she had amazing friends who always went home with her, you know. I don't know. But that night was a particularly bad night anyway. And her friends got her to call me and I spoke to her and she calmed down and they stayed with her and I knew she was safe with them. And that was the last time that Arwen spoke to me about having any of those feelings. That was a year and 4 months before we lost her. In the following year and 4 months, she didn't tell me that she was having any of those thoughts. I tried, you know, to talk to her as I always had. She didn't seem to be not talking to me, but I didn't hear anything about it. And I was checking in on her.
Of course.
And I thought things were getting better. But actually, from what I've heard, things were actually getting worse. Things I found out since. And it's like we all had a little bit of the puzzle. None of us had the whole picture. Yeah. When you put it all together, you go, oh. But each of us only saw a little bit and thought that that's all that there was the little bit that we were seeing.
So like a 100-piece jigsaw or whatever, and everyone had one piece that made no sense and yet you all felt you were doing the right thing.
Yeah, I thought she was, you know, doing great. I thought she was back to herself. She'd finished college. I was like, if I can get her through college, if we can get to the end, and she was determined to get a 1-1. And I was like, okay, well, if she can get that, then she'll be happy because, you know, this was really important to her. And I remember at one point her grade came back and she was 0.5% off. And I was like, surely they'll round you up, Arwen. But she was really annoyed that they hadn't and quite upset, but they did. And she got her first. And I was like, that's it now. She's going to be okay. And she got a little job for the summer. And then she got her physiotherapy job and each thing seemed to be a step on the way for her becoming herself, who she was meant to be, becoming a physiotherapist. And then in the September, she went to just before she started in October with her physiotherapy job. So in September, she took 3 weeks off and she went to Mallorca to train as a yoga instructor.
Great.
And I was like, oh, this is going to be wonderful for her. And so good
you would
for,
think for the
for
Zen.
Herself as well as for her. She was like, it's going to be so good for my clients. Yeah. And a lot of the time with physiotherapy, you prescribe exercises. And sure, that's what yoga is a lot of those stretches and exercises that a physiotherapist might prescribe. So it worked really well for her with her career. So it all seemed to be great. And the four of us used to go away, like myself, my husband and Cian and Arwen would go away. I used to steal them away for a night over Christmas just to get them so we could be together, because it's so hard to, when you've grown up children, like, you know, to get them away from friends and boyfriends and everybody. And I just wanted to have them to ourselves. So we had that one night over Christmas.
Where'd you
and
go?
We went to Farnham.
And how was it?
It was wonderful. Good. And sometimes we'd go away and you could see that she wasn't maybe great. Or, and I used to think, oh, maybe it's because she wants to be with her friends or whatever. But she was in great form. She was in the best form she'd ever been when we would go away for those family nights. And we had a wonderful time. I thought everything was super. And then COVID came. And I knew she was worried with COVID. She said, oh, I'm really worried. My anxiety is going to get really bad. So I tried to reassure her and, you know, that she was at home with us and that we'd mind her.
As you would think that, particularly in that atmosphere, and a very loving atmosphere.
Very,
and,
yeah.
You know, and not only that, but you just described brilliantly, Marie, the idea of Zoom calls and Arwen having the crack on the Zoom calls. And it sounded like all was well.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
No, it wasn't, no.
And it was impossible to see coming.
We just couldn't. I mean, if you had asked me on that the day before, we had this wonderful day. She wanted us to tidy up the back garden so that she could film yoga videos in the back garden. So we were all out with power hoses. Her boyfriend was there in his bare feet with the power hose because he didn't have wellies, power hosing down the patio. And she was dancing around on a broomstick, pretending to be Hermione Granger in Harry Potter. And we were weeding and, you know, doing all that stuff, cutting things back and getting it all ready so she could do her yoga videos in the back garden. And the weather was beautiful. And then myself and Paul went off and walked the dog. And when we came back, we were taken in turns to cook dinner.
Yes.
Herself and her boyfriend cooked the dinner. And they'd brought the table out into the back garden because the back garden was now gorgeous and gleaming.
And ready.
And ready to party in.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd made lovely Mexican food. And Arwen had made guacamole. And we came home and they were sitting. And she'd dolled herself all up. She was wearing this beautiful purple outfit. And she'd got a lovely purple makeup palette for her birthday. That was her favourite colour. And she'd done her makeup and she was gorgeous. And we had a wonderful evening sitting in the back garden on a lovely, balmy, sunny April evening after all our hard work. And it was just like a perfect day. And I would have said, everything's rosy in my garden.
It's interesting you use the expression the day before.
Mm.
You don't have to finish that sentence, sadly, because I know exactly what you're talking about. If we can go to the day and tell us what happened, but don't be upsetting yourself. Tell us what you feel we should know or need to know. And then after that, we'll understand wherever you want or don't want to go, OK?
I mean, it was Easter Sunday and there was the normal extra nice dinner and kind of board games after dinner. And she had done two yoga classes in the morning, which was kind of unusual for her. And I was asking her, she taught one and she had been a participant in the other. And I was just checking that she was okay. And she said she was, that one of them was a such and such yoga and the other one was a different kind of yoga. And I was like, okay, grand. And after dinner, the college had planned some sort of quiz or get together or something that night that had been cancelled. And I knew she was a little bit annoyed about that. And she was a bit off when we were kind of finishing up playing the board games, she was a bit off. So I was checking on her and checking to see what she wanted to do. So she and her boyfriend had different plans with different friends. You know, they were both on Zoom with different friend groups. And I was checking to see if she wanted to come and watch TV with me. And she was like, no, I'm talking to the girls. So she'd Zoomed the girls. And at one point I heard her and I thought she was crying. So I turned down the radio or the telly and I realised she was actually like laughing loud. I was like, oh, she's okay. And she went up upstairs and she was upset. She calmed down again and it was nothing that I would have thought of back to conversations about suicide or anything like that. None of that was, I wasn't thinking that way. I just thought she was upset over the college thing being cancelled. There was a change of plans. It was that sort of upset. And I thought maybe she's just tired. Like, we were very busy yesterday and she has done her yoga. And so she kind of calmed down and went into her room and her dad went in to check on her and see, did she want anything? And she said no. And I just, I stood at the door and I just checked she was okay. Whenever I was worried about her, I would check that. I would just do a little double check with her. There's a little thing that I used to say to her that sort of just checked that she was okay. And so I checked that she was okay. And as far as I was concerned, she was okay. I went downstairs. We were watching Schitt's Creek, which was our favourite comedy show. It's about 20 minutes long. And then went back upstairs. And I would always go in to say goodnight to her. And then I found her.
Well, I'm sorry. Which feels quite a redundant thing to say to you, given what you've just told me. And I definitely don't want to bring you into any darker corners than you've already gone with us this morning. And let me ask you, not what you did then, but in the days and weeks afterwards, how did you process the most awful, unimaginable thing that could visit upon a parent anywhere? How did you manage?
I don't know.
You're still managing, aren't you? As you will, probably for the rest of your life, of course. And again, I don't want to upset you, but I think that you've been talking so candidly about Arwen and how she had this lovely skill and ability to put others at ease and help others. And in many ways, that's why you're here today. You want to keep her story alive, by what I gather, and keep her in the world. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. That's it. I mean, I didn't think that I would be able to get through.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing you think, well, if that happened to me, I would die as well.
People say that, don't they?
Yeah, and yeah. I really believed
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I understand that.
But I didn't.
What do you do in a day, given day, when you find yourself getting so upset you just can barely handle it anymore? Where do you go to try to level out?
So you just have to make everything really, really tiny and manageable. You just put one foot in front of the other. You can't go back. I can't go back and change anything.
No.
So my only choice is to go forward. That's the only thing I can do. I just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And I was saying to somebody, I was actually my counsellor.
Yeah.
I was saying that, you know, I'm a little bit afraid of heights. So, and I remember climbing Skelligs, and it's fine going up, but on the way down, I was nervous. And if I was to look down the whole way down, yeah. I would go all funny and wobbly and I'd be like, oh,
vertigo.
I'm going to fall. So all I could do is literally look at the very next step and just focus on that. Not look the whole way down, just look at the next step that I have to put my foot on. And that's how I would manage going down those stairs in Skelligs. And that's how I've managed my grief, is just look at the very next thing that I have to do. And I can do that one little thing. And then look at the very next thing that I have to do. And I can do that little thing.
How are things like going to the shops and things?
Well, they were very difficult at the start. But in a way, COVID helped in a way, because you didn't see anybody and you didn't go anywhere and you didn't do anything. And we were kind of locked away in a bubble, and the world ended, and that felt right. You know, the whole world stopped.
Yeah, you did.
And that felt right for me and for us.
That's intriguing, because
there was comfort in that.
I can understand that, because people often say when somebody beautiful in their lives dies, they can't understand how the world keeps going, mm-hmm. how cars keep moving, how people still keep going to work, how flowers keep growing. And the world came to a crashing full stop.
It did. And that was right and proper for me.
That is amazing. What class of comfort did you take from that?
I mean, it was some sort of comfort.
Because your world ended, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah.
And therefore everyone can try and share that sense of where you're coming from.
Yeah, it just felt right to me. Obviously it was horrible for everybody. And there was obviously horrible parts to it too, that we couldn't be with our friends. You know, my sister was in America and my brother was in the UK, and they couldn't be with us, or even family couldn't come, or friends couldn't hug us. You know, it was very isolating in another way. So it was a double-edged sword. There was only 10 people allowed in the crematorium, and we still haven't been able to have a memorial for her. I'd booked one for last Easter Sunday, but we couldn't have it because the numbers wouldn't be enough. So hopefully next Easter Sunday we'll have a memorial for her, even though it'll be 2 years down the line. Some things just get pushed off, but we got through because of we have amazing friends. Paul has amazing friends. I have amazing friends.
Who are
the Blurbets?
I was going to, you took the words right out of
my
mouth. Who are the Blurbets? That was my next question.
Blurbets are our book club, and they've been absolutely incredible. And I know for a fact, like, I couldn't have gotten through it without them. I just know that. And I just want to thank them all. They know who they are. Like, but they've just been incredible.
What do they do? What did they bring to your world in the middle of all this darkness?
They, you know, Shane Gillan, the artist, they commissioned a drawing of Arwen. Which,
how lovely.
Oh my goodness, it's just, and he's lovely. He really captured her smile. And but we had the magic doorstep. So they couldn't come in and they couldn't give me a hug and, you know, we couldn't see each other.
Yes.
You know, we weren't even allowed in people's back gardens and stuff. It was, I mean, it was crazy. But so there was a constant stream of flowers and food and little gifts and books and presents and everything and anything. You know, afternoon tea was delivered. There was, oh, just everything and anything you could imagine would arrive on the doorstep. I'd go to go out the door and the magic doorstep would have arrived again. There'd be something else. Or even from a card to a gift to food to entertainment. Everything was provided by the magic doorstep. And they ran a tag team making sure that somebody was on it. You're on today. You're looking after her today. You're minding her today. You check in on her today. They were just, you know, phenomenal.
How's Paul?
Paul is... he's good. Yeah, he's as good as can be expected. We're doing okay. Yeah,
that's the expression, as good as can be expected.
Yeah, we're okay. I mean, that's the aim.
And Cian, how old is Cian?
Cian is just gone 29 there at the weekend.
Okay.
Yeah, a big boy.
He's a man.
He's a man.
And how's that man doing?
He's been incredible. He's been a great support as well as, you know, he's, I think that falls sometimes to the child in the sense that maybe the mum's grief or the parent's grief is seen as being bigger than the sibling's grief. So he's been a great support,
good,
as well as having to deal with his own grief at losing his only sibling. So,
It's been a tough road and still continues to be. You said before we came on the air, you told me that yourself and Elsa, your dog, are great companions by the sea.
Mm-hmm.
That
yes.
must offer you some class of, I don't know, clarity or clearing the cobwebs.
Yes, yes. No, I do
a morning.
Love a walk by the beach. There's just something beautiful about being by the sea. Even on dark and gloomy days, it's still beautiful. It's just comforting. I think being near nature there's something healing there. You're looking for little things that can heal. I mean, and laughter is healing. I read a quote that I really like. I do like my quotes. I find comfort. I was saying it to somebody recently. At the very start, I couldn't find the words to express my pain. So I was looking for grief quotes to try and express my pain. And I found that a very good way of expressing myself, I suppose. But from the other side of it is that they said that, you know, this whole idea that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Mm-hmm. That maybe that's not true, but what doesn't kill you gives you unhealthy coping mechanisms and a dark sense of humour, and I quite like that.
I like that too. I can see why you enjoy the comedy programmes you've been telling us about, because you need to keep an eye on the humour factor of the courses.
It pulls me out of the dark place. It does, yeah.
So why are you going to be leaving here with my jacket? I mean, I thought, because when you came in and said, I said, let me take your jacket, and you said, no, it's yours. I said, let me take my jacket back then. Why are you leaving here with my jacket?
So 6 months after we lost Arwen, and I was realising that we weren't going to be able to have a memorial for her at the 6 month mark, and that the 1 year mark was going to be unlikely as well, I realised I had to do something for her. And I reached out to a childhood friend of mine, Maeve McMahon. She had offered early on, if there's anything I can do with my contacts, Marie, let me know. And I said, I'd love to do something for Arwen, some sort of a fashion show or something. It definitely had to be something to do with the clothes angle. And she went, oh, I know somebody. And the person that she knew was Anne-Marie Tomchak, who had worked for Vogue.
Yes. Yeah.
Very fashionable lady. So we had a Zoom call, and Anne-Marie had also been thinking about doing something around the circular economy and fashion. So put all our minds together and came up with Share Joy. So the idea behind Share Joy is that we started off with a launch where we had 20 successful Irish women like Laura Whitmore and Una Healy and Louise McSherry donated an item of clothing, and we sold it on Depop and the money went to Pieta.
Great.
And since then, every month we've had a star or two or three. Sometimes we've more than one, but we've at least one star every month who donates. And We sell the clothes on Depop and the money goes to Pieta. We did a Pride edit in June. We're still selling those items. The money will go to LGBT Ireland. And for November, we're doing a men's edit. So we're hoping that some...
That creatures like
successful
me...
Successful men like yourself...
That's moot. But people like me will root deep into their wardrobe and come up with the goods for... I mean, I don't know if you'll find another man on the island who can fit that jacket on them, but nevertheless...
It's gorgeous.
It's not a bad one.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think it's unisex. I don't think there's any reason why women can't wear men's clothes or men can't wear women's clothes.
So the young people are wearing dad jeans and mom jeans now.
Exactly, exactly. But loads of people would love that. It's a beautiful jacket. You're very kind. Thank you very much.
Not at all. It's just I wanted to be part of what you're doing because it makes so much sense. So I hope there's some use in it. But I'm not trying to be any more special than anyone else. I hope that other people in the same position that I can be in might be able to donate too, which would be lovely.
Well, it would be lovely, and it's a very feel good thing. I think everybody can feel good about it, and I'd like to think that anybody who has been impacted by suicide or mental health could take comfort in it, and that there is something you can do. You can either go onto our webpage and you can donate, or if there's everyone I think has something in their wardrobe that they bought for a special occasion or that they really love but they feel that they're not going to wear again. So we'd like to think that we're the perfect place for those items.
Add meaning to the parting.
That's it.
Do something good with
it. Support the circular economy and support mental health services. Pieta have been incredibly helpful to me and my family over the last year and a half. And I know they support other families around the country. So we would like to help them to continue to do that.
Sharejoy.ie. It's very easy. And there's a Sharejoy page on Instagram as well. And I know that a lot of the younger people they love Depop and it makes a lot of sense. It's kind of vintage clothing online type of thing.
Yeah.
So head there and make a difference along the way. Sharejoy.ie. Marie, to you and Paul and to Cian and to Elsa and to your friends in the book club and all the people who populated the magic doorstep with so much love and kindness and in memory of Arwen, thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you very much.
That was not an easy thing to do, but I appreciate it greatly. I think it'll make a difference for some people listening in today. And I wish you every good fortune and great happiness in the future.
Thank you very much.
I really mean that. Thank you for your time. And for people listening in this morning, if there's something that they heard and you want help, there's a rte.ie/helplines. And of course, pieta.ie will help you there too. But in the meantime, my thanks to Marie Sullivan, who spoke so beautifully and warmly and elegantly and eloquently about her daughter, Arwen. We appreciate your time so much this morning. The text number, as always today, is 51551.